Hello, and welcome to a new episode of SAHA Conversations, a podcast by the Scottish Arts and Humanities Alliance. SAHA, in short. In this series, we celebrate arts and humanities across Scotland. We bring together arts and humanities enthusiasts from different industries, from business to design, from politics to media, and of course, academia. Wherever their careers might have led them, they all share a passion for arts and humanities and recognize their important contribution to society. In this episode, we'll talk about whiskey, poetry, and the representations of Scottishness in the history of Scotland's national drink. We are joined by Lisa Marie Feige, a PhD student at the University of Regensburg. The working title of her dissertation is Freedom and Whiskey Gang Together, Representations of Scottishness in the History of Scotland's National Drink. Thank you for joining us, Lisa.
Thank you very much.
So, we hear you like whiskey. How did this passion start?
Oh, this is a great question to start with. I have to confess my love affair with whiskey didn't start out as love at all. In fact, it began in complete disaster. So when I was a teenager, I had what I think many listeners will recognize. That one terrible encounter with cheap supermarket bourbon and not even Jack Daniels or Jim Beam.
Oh, no.
A really awful knockoff brand, drowned in Coke. So let's just say the experience was so traumatic that I couldn't drink whiskey or Coke for years afterwards. So for me, whiskey was totally ruined by that time. But then a good friend of mine and study colleague of mine, Dominic, who happened or still is a real whiskey lover and collector, convinced me to give it another chance. So he poured me, when I was still living at the dorm, a dram of, I think it was Glendronach 12 years. And that was a real revelation for me. So that whiskey tasted like nothing I have ever tasted or I had ever tasted before. So for me, it was rich, it was complex, it was utterly different from the sugary bourbon and Coke concoction of my teenage years. So it was really the first time I realized that whiskey could be poetry in liquid form. And around the same time, my longstanding passion for Scotland came into play. So I traveled there, I visited distilleries, and something happened that many whiskey lovers will probably understand. So once you've drunk whiskey in Scotland, it's never the same again. So suddenly, when you have been there and when you go back home and you have a dram by yourself, it tastes suddenly of the land itself, like the peat and the rain and the mist and everything you associate with Scotland, even the rare burst of Highland sunshine. It becomes inseparable from the place. And I know I'm romanticizing here, but I think it's a common phenomenon. So from then on, I was hooked. I started hosting whiskey tastings, which actually helped me finance my studies. I worked for years in two specialist shops for whiskey, spirits, and tobacco. I became a member of the International Whiskey Club Slow Drink and supported the Valhalla of Whiskey Museum in Regensburg, which I still do, which is curated by Pitt Krause, who's often also called the Whiskey Pope. So a quick shout out here. Today, I work full time for Gebrüder Heinemann in Hamburg as a buying assistant in the luxury travel retail sector, especially in the department LTC, which is short for liquor, tobacco, and confectionery, where whiskey culture and history, I think, intersect beautifully in a business with a long family tradition. And that's why I'm very happy to be part of that universe and to be part of that family as well. Alongside all that, I pursued my academic passion. So my academic background is actually in English literature with a particular focus on Scotland and Ireland. And from very early on, I was fascinated by the ways in which literature does more than just tell stories. So it constructs cultural identities. And when I came across Robert Burns' famous line, freedom and whiskey gang together and not an Outlander, I have to say that. So it was in the author's Earnest Cry and Prayer, his 1786 poem, I was struck by how a single drink could be bound so powerfully to the idea of liberty, of belonging and national selfhood. So
this line, freedom and whiskey gang together, became the seed of my doctoral project, which is also called Freedom and Whiskey Gang Together, representations of Scottishness in the history of Scotland's national drink. I'm pursuing this research at the University of Regensburg with Professor Jochen Petzold in collaboration with the University of Glasgow under the supervision of Professor Murray Pittock. And my dissertation then investigates how whiskey has been represented in literature, art, and cultural memory from the early 18th to the 19th century, particularly during the period of illicit distilling and the so-called excise crisis. So to me, whiskey is never just a drink. It's a cultural text, a distilled narrative of rebellion, resilience, and also identity. So in literature, we see this from Burns to Stevenson. We see it in journalism. We see it in popular songs and even in paintings. And what fascinates me here is the way whiskey mediates between Scotland's internal self-image and how Scotland has been perceived by the outside world as well. So whiskey, or uishkeba, which is the Gaelic term for this and translates to the water of life, has never been merely a stimulant, I think. It is a cultural text through which rebellion, resilience, and belonging have been narrated for centuries. And to study it, for me, is to reveal how cultural symbols can unify or divide, how traditions can be invented yet endure, and how history leaves traces in what we consume or what we celebrate and what we inherit as well. So I fell in love with whiskey not through its taste, or not only through its taste, but through its stories. So stories that tell us who the Scots believe themselves to be and how they wish to be remembered. So in a sense, just to sum it up and to pick up your or what I said at the beginning. So in a sense, I began with a really, really bad bourbon and Coke hangover and ended up with Burns, Scott Stevenson, and centuries of cultural history in my class.
What a journey. Well, thank you for your answer.
You mentioned the idea of Scotland, the idea of having a dram in Scotland, perhaps the idea of having a dram in sunny Scotland, and of course, Burns, because whiskey is not just a drink, it's more than that. It's embedded in poetry, in history, and of course the economy. From your research, can you tell us how did whiskey become a national symbol?
Well, I can at least try. I'm not finished with my dissertation project yet, so I really hope I'll be able to answer that question in full, or maybe not when I'm done with this. But as far as I can tell right now, whiskey became a national symbol. That's what I found out through a fascinating and at times paradoxical process of conflict, of repression, and also of reinvention. Many of the listeners, or some of them, might have heard, especially when they have a scholarly or cultural studies background, of Eric Hobsbawm's famous concept, the invention of tradition. And that is, I think, very crucial here. So traditions, he says, are not timeless relics. They're often consciously constructed during moments of upheaval to provide continuity and identity as well. This means that whenever there is a perceivable break in the linear progress of history, this could be a war or a revolution, for example, just to mention a few, traditions, culture, and identities are renegotiated or reinvented. And we have several moments in history where that happened. And I think that whiskey could be seen as a prime example of this. So when you have a look at the origins of Scotch whiskey, they go back to monastic distilling in the medieval period. Scots and Irish people are still fighting over the fact who actually invented whiskey. I personally believe it was the Irish, but I think it's symbolic for us then emerges a little later in the 18th century. So we have the 1707 Act of Union under where Scotland becomes united with Britain under one crown and one government, where whiskey production was subjected to new excise duties imposed by the British government.
And these taxes disproportionately affected the Highlands, where small-scale distilling was a livelihood and also a cultural practice. So people believed in the Highlands that it was their birthright to produce whiskey, and rightly so, obviously. And resistance to these laws gave rise to what we now call the excise crisis. You would imagine that people from the Highlands stopped producing whiskey after such ferocious and strict laws were imposed on them, but not the Scots. So actually, during that time, illicit stills flourished and smuggling became a way of life, and whiskey itself became a symbol of resistance to an external authority. So there's one book which I loved reading by David Dace. It's called Scotch Whiskey, It's Past and Present. And he describes whiskey here as the spirit that bound together Scotland's people in defiance of government interference. Charles McLean, who has written many, many books about the history of whiskey and also contemporary books about whiskey, he likewise argues that illicit distilling was not merely criminal, but cultural. It was seen as a patriotic duty to resist English taxation. And thus, whiskey came to embody both, I think, community and resilience, and also political rebellion. And when we look at literature of the time, I think that literature only reinforced the symbolic role, because Robert Burns, for example, linked whiskey to freedom, as we have heard earlier in his quote. Sir Walter Scott wove it into his Highland novels like Waverley or Rob Roy. Later, we have Stevenson and others romanticized its association with wild landscapes and untamed characters. So whiskey became not just a drink, but a metonym for Scotland itself. So its land, its people, and its struggle for autonomy as well. And I think this duality we see here in the meaning, the symbolic meaning of whiskey, has never really disappeared. So today, whiskey, I think, remains still enshrouded by this myth, carrying with it an aura of mystery and timelessness. So its presence in popular culture illustrates this beautifully, I think. So we have James Bond, for example, whose impeccably suave choice of a dram just stands out in the cinematic history, to Outlander's romantic Highland landscapes and the dashing heroes that, of course, consume whiskey all the time. We have contemporary series like The Vampire Diaries, where whiskey is practically a character in itself, even though I think they're mostly drinking bourbon. But I think there's a few episodes where Scotch whiskey also plays a role. So in that series, it's also always there, always signifying something more than just alcohol. I'm just saying that because the two main actors of the series, Ian Somerhalder and Paul Wesley, have created their own whiskey brand, with which we have a collaboration right now. And interestingly enough, this brand is called Brothers Bond, which is also emblematic for what whiskey actually stands for. So it becomes shorthand for friendship, belonging, intimacy, power, rebellion, nostalgia, or even immortality in that sense. So the drink's layered history makes it endlessly adaptable. So wherever whiskey appears on screen or in fiction, it instantly pulls with it centuries of Scottish culture, also politics, and also myth. So in that sense, whiskey still performs what Hobsbawm would call an invented tradition. So a cultural signifier that is continuously reinterpreted, yet always resonant and always carrying the weight of the past into the present. So when today the first word many people abroad associate with Scotland is whiskey, that is not an accident. It is the result of centuries of cultural work of writers, of artists, of smugglers and distillers who distilled not just spirits, but Scottishness itself.
What a beautiful answer. Thank you. Whiskey, as you so wonderfully illustrated, is part of culture, part of art and various modern media. You mentioned TV shows and movies. But let's talk business. Let's talk about money. What is the impact of whiskey on the economic sphere? Not just Scotland, but everywhere.
Yeah, I will try to make it not too dry. So whiskey, I think, is one of those rare cultural products that crosses seamlessly between the symbolic and the economic. On the one level, it is a cultural icon. On another, it is Scotland's most successful export industry, which is deeply intertwined with politics and economics. Again, to dive a little into history, we have the 18th century where whiskey production was a site of tension. I mentioned that before, between the Highland communities and the state. So we have excise duties, as I mentioned before, which generated unrest. So the illicit trade, vividly documented also by Charles MacLean and Daniel McCannell in Scotland's Secret History, was not only an act of survival, but also one of defiance. So smuggling was so widespread at the time that, as MacLean puts it, the exciseman was the most hated man in Scotland. Yet we have figures like Robert Burns, for example, who himself worked as an exciseman, and that is really interesting. So he embodies the complexity of this relationship, caught between enforcing the law and sympathizing, on the other hand, with the people. So politically, whiskey was bound up with Jacobite sympathies too. We have many illicit distillers that were also Jacobite supporters, and whiskey was part of the informal economy that sustained resistance to the Hanoverian regime. And later, the Excise Act reforms of the 1820s and 1830s legalized and rationalized production, which kind of paved the way for industrial scale distilleries. And what had once been a rebel spirit slowly became a pillar of British economy. By the 19th century, Scotch whiskey was no longer just a contraband drink of the Highlands, but a global commodity. So exports to the British Empire and beyond turned whiskey into Scotland's economic ambassador. So in that sense, it is both a local tradition and an international brand, an emblem of Scottish identity, but also a cornerstone of the UK's balance of trade. So there is a lot of stuff that has been written on whiskey, and cultural products like whiskey and the ways in which they became vehicles of both nationalism and unionism. And whiskey, I think, could be seen as a proud marker of Scottish distinctiveness while also integrating Scotland into global capitalism under the Union. So that paradox that whiskey is both rebellion and respectability, again, is at the heart of its political significance.
Thank you. That is very interesting. And I'm sure some of our audience will go and read up more about this after this episode. So, whiskey is certainly a consistent and persistent player in the economy, but it is also a consistent and persistent player in the arts. So, how has the presence of whiskey changed, if it had, in the arts? It could be poetry, painting, or even modern media such as TV show and movies that we previously mentioned. How has it persisted for so long?
Oh, nothing is ever persistent. So, but what I can tell is that whiskey has been extraordinarily adaptable in cultural representation, from the Romantic poets to Netflix. It has never gone out of fashion, though, so that is your persistence. But its meaning has kind of shifted. So again, I'm referring to the 18th century. Whiskey was often associated with rebellion. We had that before with rural life and a kind of rustic authenticity, which Burns calls in poems like Scotch Drink, where he celebrates whiskey as the poor man's wine, actually. We have Sir Walter Scott, who uses whiskey scenes in Waverley and Rob Roy to stage encounters between Highland tradition and modernity. But there is also a real moment in history, actually, we have that is very fascinating, where Sir Walter Scott played a fundamental role. In 1822, King George IV made the first visit by a reigning British monarch to Scotland since Charles II in 1651. This visit was stage managed by Scott, who was not just a novelist back then, but also a powerful cultural figure, promoting a romantic, unified image of Scotland and also the United Kingdom then. So Scott organized elaborate pageantry to celebrate Scottish heritage, you have it all there, the Highland dress, tartan bagpipes, the full program. So much of the traditional Highland imagery we associate with Scotland today was popularized or reinvented, there's your term, for this visit. So whiskey played also an important symbolic role, as you can imagine, during the festivities. At the time, whiskey was still considered a rough Highland spirit. Scott, however, used the royal visit here to elevate whiskey's status, presenting it as the national drink of Scotland and therefore also the UK. So during this visit, a quaigh was used, and a quaigh, just to make it more understandable, is a drinking vessel, a traditional one, where whiskey was traditionally served, especially in the Highlands. It sometimes has Celtic engravings on it and stuff like that. So that was really crucial here that he used this quaigh to present this whiskey to the king, symbolizing hospitality and Scottish unity to the crown. So it became an iconic image. So the monarch drinking whiskey from a Highland vessel, linking whiskey then to national pride and tradition. And this not only cemented Sir Walter Scott's image as the architect of modern Scottish identity, but also marked whiskey's transformation from a rustic drink to a symbol of Scottish nationhood that has been absorbed into the union. So you got a real sense of power here, a royal seal of power, so to speak. So going further by the Victorian period, and this has something to do with what Scott obviously did with the whole romanticized image of Scotland that had been absorbed into the British nation state. By the late Victorian period, whiskey was increasingly romanticized. Paintings by Sir Edwin Landseer, which you can see in the background here, actually, depict Highland stills in picturesque settings, giving it a gloss of nobility to what was in reality a hard and often violent trade. So, and literature likewise softened its edges. So smugglers became dashing heroes all of a sudden, and illicit stills became symbols of Highland charm. Then we have kind of a shift in the 20th century, where you have the writers of the Scottish Renaissance, like Neil Gunn, Comte Mackenzie, Hugh McDiarmid. They return to a different image of whiskey. They use it as a symbol of national regeneration. Gunn, who was also an exciseman, explored the tension between law and community in novels like The Silver Darlings. McDiarmid often invoked whiskey as both curse and inspiration. And Edwin Murr, for example, saw it as emblematic of Scotland's divided psyche. In popular culture today, whiskey has become more globalized. So in films like Whiskey Galore, both the 1949 and the 2016 version, we have Trainspotting, we have Ken Loach's The Angel's Share, which continued to use whiskey as shorthand for Scottish identity, sometimes playfully, sometimes also very, very critically. And television shows like Outlander perpetuate then again the romantic Highlands image, dramatizing whiskey as part of a nostalgic cultural package. So yeah, I would say whiskey's cultural presence has changed. It has moved from subversion to celebration, from rebellion to branding, but its persistence shows that it remains an inexhaustible symbol and source of inspiration as well.
Oh, that was a brilliant answer. Thank you very much. And to conclude this podcast, last but not least, I have to ask you this question.
I know what's coming.
Oh, yes. In your opinion, in your professional opinion, nowadays, who gets associated with whiskey the most? Robert Burns or Jamie Fraser from Outlander?
Oh, that is a delightful question. And I knew it would come in the end. On one level, I would say Robert Burns will always be the cultural father of whiskey. His poetry immortalized whiskey as inseparable from freedom, resilience, and everyday Scottish life. Every Burns supper, for example, around the world still raises a dram in his honor on the 25th of January every year. I mean, that says a lot. Yet in today's global popular culture Jamie Fraser from Outlander might well be the more immediate association, especially outside the UK. So he embodies the obvious romanticized Highlander. He's rugged, he's rebellious, he's deeply tied to land and tradition. And whiskey flows naturally into that image. So in a sense, this very comparison demonstrates the continuity of whiskey as a cultural symbol, but Burns created the literary myth. So Fraser represents its modern reinvention, I would say. Both illustrate Hobsbawm's idea that traditions are constantly reimagined. The fact that people in America, Germany, or Japan now associate whiskey with a fictional Highlander shows just how global and malleable this symbol has become. So personally, I would still give the crown to Burns, even though I'm also rooting for Jamie Fraser, obviously. But after all, it was he who declared that freedom and whiskey gang together. And that line still resonates more powerfully than any television script.
Well, this has been an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much for joining us today.
You're very welcome.
Thank you for joining us on this Saha conversation. We hope you enjoyed it and learned something new. If you like this episode, please like, subscribe, and share it on your favorite social media platform. You can tag Saha on Instagram at Saha Voice, Blue Sky at sahavoice.bluesky.social, and LinkedIn and Facebook on Scottish Arts and Humanities Alliance.